This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. With the New World Report, Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. The headline in Reuters, Peru. Peru judge strikes down bid to stop ousted president leaving country. Second ousted president. A man named Castillo from the indigenous part of the country was elected some years ago, was challenged by the legislature, removed from office, and jailed. To my knowledge, he remains incarcerated, accused of corruption. The vice president then assumed the office. Her name is Balarte. I remember her trouble initially because she was wearing an expensive watch. I've not followed the story of corruption closely since then, but the Professor Evan Ellis is here to help me understand the structure of this removal from office. For example, Dayline Lima, a Peruvian judge, rejected a bid to prevent former President Dina Boluarte, who Congress abruptly ousted last week, from leaving the country while state prosecutors investigate her for alleged abuse of office and money laundering. Professor, we both know that for some time there's been loud grumbling in Peru about the leadership of Boluarte, the trip to China, the expensive watch, the non-explanation, and the delay of an election to give her legitimacy. At this moment, what is driving this ousting from office? Why now?
Good evening to you, John. The surprise really is that Boluarte was not ousted before now. The situation has continued to spiral really out of control. As you mentioned, the frustrations among many Peruvians were as much about her personal activities as the deteriorating situation in the country. One of the things that's happened with Peru's combination of narco violence with also illegal mining activity with other public insecurity that's come from the almost 1.5 million Venezuelans that have been living in the country, and the associated increase in violence in urban areas by groups such as Tren de Aragua and splinter groups, is that really violence for many Peruvians has taken off. Corruption in public institutions has escalated. Reportedly, in the greater Lima area, for example, just in the past year, the amount of extortions against small shop owners had increased by 200% just in 1 year. And there was the perception, frankly, that President Boluarte was not doing anything about it, was not even really having an attitude that suggested that she really was trying that hard. However, the one thing that did save her was that the Peruvian Congress itself is very fragmented between the right and left, different factions. And had they essentially invalidated her rule before that, something called removing her on a charge called permanent moral incapacity within the Peruvian Constitution, they would have had to call for early elections. Well, they are now in the run-up to next spring's elections, and so the early election clause didn't apply, and so that frustration finally got to the point where they removed her. There was a rather dramatic 24-hour period, but finally the vote was literally unanimous, 122-0, essentially, to oust her after eight previous attempts. But again, it was a sense that she was not doing enough or not doing anything, in combination with the personal issues, the investigation over the Rolex watches and the trips and other things. So we actually now move into a new territory, which is maybe at least a little bit hopeful. A very young, previously unknown candidate, Jose Jerry, has now become president. He has just announced a new cabinet. Jerry himself was a bit of an accidental figure. He came in under, I believe, Martin Vizcarra, basically as a legislative substitute. He largely came to the leadership of the Peruvian Congress, probably because those power brokers believed that he was not going to do anything to seriously threaten their individual agendas within the Congress. There have been some allegations against Jerry, unproven, over corruption, over actually there is one very serious rape charge against him, although never convicted on it. it, as well as some charges of political favoritism. However, despite all of those questions, at least it does seem that he has a, you know, at least a relative, you know, proactive and energetic orientation. Indeed, in the early days, he actually supervised a major police operation against illegal mining groups. Again, just to show that he wanted to get things off in a good start. The other thing that's been promising about Jerry is in naming his cabinet. Some people were fearful whether he would name a cabinet that was too far to the left or had questionable figures. But the people that's coming in his new team, the Prime Minister Ernesto Alvarez Miranda, a very respected law school dean of a very important university in Peru, the San Martin de Porres University, the new foreign minister, an experienced diplomat, Hugo de Zelaya Martinez, the defense minister, Cesar Diaz Peche, the interior minister, Vicente Tiburico. So if there's a bit of good news, Jerry, despite some of the concerns about him as a person, seems to be off to a proactive start, and he seems to have named a relatively competent cabinet. Now, there's only a couple months, and so the question of how much good he will be able to do, and certainly Peru's enormous challenges with, again, the illegal mining violence, the narco trafficking, the urban violence. He's got a lot to tackle. The good news, perhaps, is that the Peruvian economy continues to chug along fairly well, thanks to record revenues from mining exports. But certainly, Jerry and his new relatively respectable cabinet has their work cut out for them.
A very large deep water port, owned, operated, built by China in Peru. How can we say this affects or doesn't affect the Chinese interests?
It's a great point. It doesn't appear that Jerry is going to make major policy changes, at least not from what's been seen so far, either toward the continuing cooperation with the U.S. in security and economic and other affairs, nor towards the Chinese. Indeed, I recall that within hours after the change, South China Morning Post and my Chinese friends reached out to me asking me precisely these questions. And thus far, there's no indication that Jerry will make major foreign policy or economic policy changes. He probably will be, again, focused on those public insecurity challenges. But in other areas, we'll probably be substantially a caretaker trying to get Peru to the elections next spring and to get the election of a new government with, again, a semblance of a popular legitimacy and support for any major foreign policy shift which would occur.
Balarte was knocked often because she would not call a new election. Is he going to call a new election sooner or later?
I think, John, the election will go off in the scheduled time. We're already only a series of months out. I believe April is the round one of those elections. And it's just getting to the period that we have, and probably without the possibility of making it any sooner, just with the amount of time that you need to physically have an election in Peru.
And Balarte, her fate is unknown. Is that correct? She's not left the country. We don't know if she's going to be jailed.
That's right. She still, despite her unpopularity, has political ties and alliances, including some saw that Jerry was not entirely unaligned with her. And so what it seems to be right now is they're leaving Boularte alone, although they've talked about investigations. I wouldn't be surprised if eventually charges were not brought against her, whether she was imprisoned. But right now, as Peru tries to move forward, they seem to be trying not to stir up the waters. She really didn't push back too terribly hard with respect to, for example, when there was the move against Pedro Castillo back in the late 2022, he tried to dissolve the Congress and took other actions, which eventually led to his arrest. It appears that Boularte essentially, although she pushed back, she did not try to do anything that was regarded as unconstitutional. Although going back to the early part of her reign, again, in addition to the corruption charges, there are other questions, for example, of her role in the repression of protesters back in 2022 that resulted in the deaths of at least 50 persons, including a fairly significant confrontation resulting, I think, 16 killed in Juliaca near the border with Bolivia. But those all go back to her past actions. It seems that for right now, she's not stirring up a lot of trouble, and they're trying to push forward, at least for the moment, with the transition to at least governing until they get to the next elections.
Questions about another leader who is in place right now and approved in place right now, Claudia Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico. The odd criticism remark these last days is that she's sitting on a fence. She's neither pro-Washington nor pro-Mexico City. I think it was put more generally, but basically because we praised Ms. Sheinbaum, President Sheinbaum, last week for handling the Trump administration ably, given all the pressures on the border and the drug cartels. But yet now I see an item that was significant to the people in Venezuela. When asked about the Peace Prize for Machado, she had no comment. Is that Marina speaking? Who is behind no comment? Because it's out of character.
I suspect that it's in part her and it's in part Morena. The interesting thing actually for me with Sheinbaum is that to date, she has been, despite having very strong ideological leftist credentials, she has been very respectful towards President Trump, very accommodating with U.S. Requests to do with security cooperation and other things, extradition. But if you look at who Claudia Sheinbaum was rising up through the Morena movement and her time in as mayor of Mexico City, where she openly gave jobs and help to some of the most left of the left of Rafael Correa's people, Jorge Glass and others ousted from Ecuador. Also, of course, as Gustavo Petro, the president of Colombia, has pointed out, she was very affiliated with leftist insurgents, including M19, as Petro has said, even referring to her as comrade. And so there probably is a ideological sympathy with the left, which makes her reluctant to kind of openly, instinctively embrace Maria Corina Machado for her very impressive receipt of the Nobel Peace Prize. So that's probably personal and reflect the fact also that she is straddling between essentially loyalties to the far left and but trying to do so in a way that does not provoke President Trump. But the question of Machado was, I suspect, probably more spontaneous as much as anything else, in that, that at least immediately would not have undercut her with President Trump. And so I don't think she felt that the need to support Machado. Indeed, there's probably a bit of attention that was speculated by President Trump himself with respect to he had wanted the Nobel Peace Prize that was given to Machado. So I suspect that Claudia Sheinbaum didn't feel the obligation to do that, although she probably also, with respect to Maria Corina Machado, as a woman and somebody who has fought for rights, she probably does have some certainly sympathy and support for her in that regard. So I think it probably reflects her own kind of mixed sentiments between ideology and Maria Corina Machado's accomplishments as a woman and a fighter for democratic rights.
1 minute, Lula da Silva, is he sending bouquets to Washington? What's his posture right now towards Trump?
Well, it appears that Lula is trying to lower the tension a little bit. Certainly, they had that half-hour conversation where it didn't appear that Lula really backed down with President Trump. But he invited him to the COP30 climate summit in Belém, Brazil. He asked for the removal of tariffs. I understand that there are back-channel negotiations now to try to get some of the Trump administration tariffs on Brazil lowered, although no indications of success. And so I think Lula, while he is also simultaneously embracing the BRICS and embracing China and embracing multilateralism, pushing back against the U.S., he's still trying to do so in a way that does not position Brazil solidly in any type of anti-U.S. camp. And that also could come to the fore if, for example, there's an action against Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, where Maduro looks to maybe a country like Brazil for asylum or protection, giving Lula an opportunity to play his kind of middle of the road, enemies of none posture. And so I think he's trying to solidly play the middle road, but we'll see to what extent that works, because he's certainly not giving up on his legal prosecutions against opponents like Jair Bolsonaro or other activities domestically.
Another colorful president recently in the news, Javier Milei. Argentina next. Professor Evan Ellis.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.